And welcome to Outbeat Now. We are one of the four shows brought to you on Outbeat Radio each Sunday night at 8 p.m. right here on KRCB Radio. I'm Greg Morelli, and I'm here with my co-host tonight, Jeff Basham and Joel Bellagio.
Good evening, Greg.
Hi there, Greg.
So what did you think of our new theme song tonight?
Wonderful. Sunbell of Outbeat Music, The Sunny Side, brought us a brand new theme song. And we premiered it tonight.
Very good. It was a great, great piece of music. So there you go. It's the...
All that work and everything, we appreciate her efforts very, very much.
Yeah, it's nice to have a new sound on the show.
Exactly.
So, Jeff, tell us what's up the first half of the show tonight.
Well, the first half of the show, we have three guests with us tonight. First is Jackie Nugent, also Sean Moran, and Rachel Sutter. All three are transgender, and they are going to be speaking to Joel and I about transgender issues in the workplace and also on college campuses, the Santa Rosa Junior College in particular.
Excellent. Well, we've got an all-live show for you tonight, so stay with us. But next up is Joel Bellagio with Outbeat News.
This is Outbeat Radio News. I'm Joel Bellagio. In international news, according to a news release posted on the Gay Games 8 website, Germany's foreign minister and vice chancellor will preside over the opening ceremony of the 2010 Gay Games in Cologne, Germany. Between July 31st and August 7th, Cologne will be the showplace for the largest LGBT sports and cultural event in the world, with some 12,000 athletes taking part in sports competitions and cultural exhibitions. The opening ceremony expects 34,000 spectators along with the 12,000 participants. The Gay Games are a sports and cultural event that takes place every 4 years with a goal of creating an awareness that will develop more tolerance for gays, lesbians, bisexuals, and transgender people. More information and video interviews with some of the participants are available at the official Gay Games website, that is gaygames.com. Meanwhile, in the United States, a Florida church is taking a stand against Gainesville mayoral candidate Greg Lowe with a No Homo Mayor campaign. Posting an anti-gay video on YouTube, the Dove World Outreach video urges people to take action against the election of the top vote-getter, Craig Lowe. Lowe was the top vote-getter in this month's general election, but because no single candidate in the field of five received more than 50% of the vote, a runoff is set for next month. The video was later removed from YouTube for violating terms of service. Articles about the church appear in the Hate Watch section of the Southern Poverty Law Center website. And it's been reported that Virginia Governor Bob McDonald recently stated that he doesn't see a need for protections against discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation. During a regular appearance on a right-wing radio talk show, McDonald said, "I don't know that we need it based on the numbers that I've seen," when asked if he would sign a bill with LGBT protections. "There isn't really any rampant discrimination on any basis in Virginia," he said. "If you're going to have a law, it needs to actually address a real problem." McDonald issued an executive directive banning workplace discrimination, but the directive is not law. Nevertheless, McDonald said it must be obeyed because discrimination is prohibited in the U.S. and Virginia constitutions. Not sure which U.S. constitution he's been reading. And Utah Pride has announced the official dates for the 2010 Utah Pride Festival. The Utah Pride Festival will be held June 4th, 5th, and 6th at Washington Square in Salt Lake City. The folks in Salt Lake are reportedly working hard to host a great festival for 2010 and hope to present an exciting list of entertainers and activities on the Pride website in the next few weeks. For more information, check that out online at utahpridecenter.org. And close to the home, celebrate the center's 8th anniversary. Indulge yourself in an evening of earthly delights. Enjoy mythically inspired performances by San Francisco's leading queer artists and performers. Rub elbows and brush wings with roaming cupids while enjoying decadent gourmet food and drink from some of San Francisco's best restaurants. That's all taking place at the San Francisco GLBT Center in San Francisco on Saturday, April 10th. For tickets, go online to sfcenter.org. And right here in our own backyard, the Sonoma County Pride Planning Committee is seeking volunteers to help plan, promote, and raise funds for Sonoma County Pride 2010, which will be held Sunday, June 6th in Guerneville. This year's theme is Sonoma County Pride is So Gay. The celebration includes a pride parade through Guerneville and an LGBTQ festival in the lush grounds of the Guerneville Lodge. The 16th annual Pride Comedy Night follows on June 12th at the Wells Fargo Center for the Arts. If you're interested in joining the Sonoma County Pride Planning Committee or with volunteering to help in any way, please email info@sonomacountypride.org. And there you have it. This has been Outbeat Radio News. I'm Joel Bellagio. And we're back in the studio. Thank you so much. And we're here with a full house, as we've already said, tonight to talk about workplace issues and issues in an educational environment that affect GLBTQII individuals and folks. And we're looking at a specific area with a specific exploration of transgendered issues. And we'd want to have everyone who's here in the studio introduce themselves. We'll start over.
Hi, I'm Jackie Newton.
Nice to meet you.
I'm Sean Moran.
Nice to meet you as well.
I'm Rachel Sutter.
And nice to meet you.
And I'm Jeff Basham, the other host here
there you
in
go.
The studio with Joel. And you are.
And we're going to take off.
You didn't say your name.
Oh, I didn't say my name.
You
this is
are,
Joel Bellagio.
There we go.
There you go.
There you go.
Okay, well, we'll take it that way.
Yeah.
And you already heard about me on the news anyway. so we're going to start right off. We gave all these wonderful folks some questions to ask that we were curious about, and we thought that our audience would appreciate hearing as well. The first thing that we'd want to know is, did any of you folks come out or transition on the job or in school? And I know we've heard about this a little earlier, but let's tell folks about that.
Yeah, this is Jackie. I transitioned in 2004 on the job at the post office, and it was interesting because I had to educate them. I mean, they said, okay, fine, you can transition. As soon as you have surgery, you can transition. And I said, no, it won't work like that, because in order to have surgery, I have to transition and live in the new gender for a year. And so it took until that my boss talked to their boss, who talked to their boss, and then had to go all the way up and all the way down because they didn't have any policy. They didn't know anything about it. So I had to teach them what to do.
Jackie, can we jump back a second? You said it takes a full year. Can you talk about that a little
That's,
bit more?
Yeah, the full year is the real life test, which is part of the Harry Benjamin standards. And in order to qualify for genital reassignment surgery, you have to live a year in the gender in which you are moving to. And they want to make sure that you have successful, you can live successfully in terms of your family relationships, your job relationships, a place to live, so that they know that you will be happy when you finish.
And who is they?
Well, the Harry Benjamin Institute is the people who set the standards. The surgeon generally goes by those standards before they will allow you to apply for surgery.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you. Thank you. And Sean?
Well, I started transitioning while at the Santa Rosa Junior College back in 2002.
You were going to school there, not
yes.
working there.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't have a job at the time, so I didn't transition while on the job. But my biggest issues before transition and then at the beginning of transition were really around the bathroom issues. Going into the bathroom as a woman, people looked at me because I dressed like a man. And so they would give me double takes. They'd actually stop me from going into the bathroom and saying, this is a women's bathroom. And I'm like, yeah, I realize that. And then once I started transitioning, I didn't quite look male yet, and so it was kind of difficult to go into the male's restroom. So that was the hardest, but within just a couple months, it all eased up.
And were other students pretty understanding for the most part? I mean, did you say anything when someone would confront you or say, "Hey, this is the wrong gender restroom"? Did you ever try to explain yourself?
Before transition, I didn't. I would just be like, "Yeah, I realized that," and I would point to my chest, which was rather large, and be like, "Yeah, I'm a woman." But once I started to transition, I just, you know, I would get into the bathroom and get out as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. As far as students in classes, I told students in the human sexuality class that I was in at the time prior to transition about it. And then I took the summer off from school. And when I came back, I had a new name. I started using the, you know, the men's room and just kind of went from there.
It had to be very rewarding, I would assume. And Rachel?
Yes, I came out this summer in June. And actually, originally, I had planned to just sneak off and disappear, resign, and show up somewhere else. But decided, no, I need to come out at work. And so I called our HR people and said, "What's our transition policy?" And they said, "Well, we don't have one." And I said, "You want to make one?" They said, "You bet." They were marvelous. I'd heard all the horror stories, and I was ready for everything. And while there was a few rough bumps in the road, I give the company big kudos for making it very easy for me. And the employees, there were a few, and even still there's a couple that have a little discomfort with me using the bathroom because I think they still see a male dressed in female clothes. So that sometimes it's easier to disappear and come back in the new role because you don't have that awkward time. So.
Sure.
It's interesting that pretty much all of you have said something about the whole notion of the organizations that you were involved in didn't have any policies or any kind of documentation or any kind of way of going through this process. And so it's fascinating to hear that you've moved these organizations in that direction. Was that an easy thing to do? I mean, or how difficult was that?
Well, for me, it was pretty easy. They were anxious to make things work. But the problem is that I tend to be a little too go along. And so I said, okay, I'll use the handicapped bathroom for the first year or two until people get used to me transitioning. And then after that, I started using the women's bathroom. Well, a couple of the women complained. Nobody would confront me, but they'd go to the union person or to the office manager and complain. And they said, well, couldn't you really keep using it? Not understanding that by trying to get me to stay in the handicap stall, they were subverting my gender identity in the place and making it that much harder for everybody else to accept me. And so it wasn't until about the time I left that I realized that I should have stood up for myself and said, no, I'm legally a woman. I should be using the ladies' room.
And I did that. I stood up and said, I'm not willing to sit in the back of the bus.
Yeah, a friend of mine who worked at the one of the San Rafael post offices has the same problem. He transitioned to male, and they won't let him use either the men or women's. He has to go the whole length of the building to use the management restroom, which of course stigmatizes
him,
which he really doesn't like.
And are you able to help him I know you're retired now, but as a past coworker, are you able to shed some guidance to him or anything?
We've talked a number of times, and I pointed out that he needs to tell them that they're not allowed to do that.
Awesome.
So that's interesting because that creates kind of a situation where each organization, maybe a division of an organization, has some kind of other idea about how they're supposed to do things, even though you've already established some rules around how this is supposed to happen. So it really, really takes continuing agitation.
I think unless the organization at the top understands that this is an issue that all the offices eventually will have to deal with in one way or another, that, you know, that they should set policies and do education. I mean, I've heard of companies that come down and do education of their managers on how to deal with this issue. But at least in the post office, as far as I heard before I left last year, they hadn't done anything at all.
Interesting. Yeah, I used to work for Agilent Technologies and Hewlett-Packard, and they did quite a bit around all of those issues in training of their management staff and in and because of an employee organization that was pulled together around GLBT issues. issues. We did a lot of advocating around bringing instructors in to hold meetings with large groups of employees and talk about those issues that are that everyone in the community is confronted with. Are there employee organizations that happen in the organizations that you folks are working in?
There was no LGBT organization in the post office that I was aware of.
Interesting.
While I was there.
Not in ours either.
Yeah, where I work, I'm not aware of anything. There might be something, but I work in a fairly large organization, and we're branched out quite a bit. So,
I do want to jump back for a second. We've been talking about jobs, and I want to go back to talking about school and college campuses. I know, Sean, you transitioned, you said, at the SRJC. How was it to change your name and things like that that you had to do with the college administrators?
I actually, you know, I'd called up the administration office and I asked them specifically, you know, what documentation do you need for me to be able to change my name on your records? They pretty much told me that I needed a court order, so I got that in the process, and, you know, that took a little time. Putting the documentation in a newspaper, actually having the court hearing, which I didn't have to show up at. Most name changes, the judge, unless there's any objections, they'll normally go ahead and green light it and not hold it up at all. So doing that, once I got those papers, you know, going to Social Security, the DMV, going after I have my identification changing it at the JC was actually fairly easy. On my diploma, I have my full legal name, so I didn't have to get a new diploma or anything like that.
Good to hear. Good. And later in the show, Greg is going to be speaking with his guest about the Campus Climate Index, and so we'll be hearing more about how schools and colleges are safe or not safe.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be interesting. That's coming up in the second half of the show tonight. But continuing with our questions and with our guests now, I want to know what stories or interesting situations maybe that you have found yourself in that you can relay that would give our audience more of an insight into exactly what you had to go through to transition. And any one of the three of you that want to start on that?
I'll go.
Okay.
Yeah. when I came out to the group, there was one particular engineer, and she was really upset about me coming out because we'd worked together fairly closely in fairly close proximity. And she was upset enough she was going to quit the company rather than work with a transgendered person. And she kind of went home and you know, I felt really bad about it, obviously, but there was nothing I could do about it particularly. But I compliment her tremendously. After 3 days, she came back, and I don't want to tell too specific here because it'll, you know, somebody will figure out who it is, maybe. But she came back and apologized, and she's just been an awesome advocate ever since. And I contribute it to something that I think is very paramount to this whole LGBTQI thing, and that's educating the people. Once they learn what we are and what we're not, the transition is a lot easier, and they can start accepting. I've seen this with several people where I work, where once you talk to them and explain it to them, they said, oh, I didn't understand. I said, yeah, I know. That's why I wanted to talk to you about it. And so I advocate that. Some of the things we looked at here that was written up in the questions and stuff was how the company can be proactive in promoting LGBTQI issues. And if we can get through to companies, that's a biggie. But there's also a bigger issue like the federal ENDA law that needs to be passed, protection. We do have one here in California, AB 196, that does give us protection at the workplace and in residential housing, which I almost got a chance to check out here because I thought we were going to change houses. But anyway, that's mine.
Well, thank you, Rachel.
And my biggest coming out at the JC was actually prior to transitioning, I was in a human sexuality class, and we didn't have any guest speakers that could come in. So the instructor had to show videos when it came to the transgender topic. Well, I had already talked to the instructor at the beginning of the semester and informed her, you know, my intentions, and but I wasn't really sure how to transition, who, you know, who to contact for being a counselor or doctor or whatever. And so when we came time for the topic, she let me speak at the end, and I actually came out to the entire class of 30 some odd students, and you know, a lot of them came up to me afterwards and thanked me and said how courageous I was. And because of transitioning, I've actually become a public speaker. I hated doing public speaking. I had a fear of public speaking prior to transition, and now I do it on a fairly regular basis. And I'm trying to educate the masses, as you might say.
Well, we're certainly happy that you're here tonight to help educate our audience. Personally, I had almost the same story as you, because I came out as gay to my human sexuality class as the first step in my coming out process after joining Positive Images. So it's a little personal tidbit from your host and Jackie.
Well, what was interesting for me is after I transitioned, every once in a while, somebody at work would call me by my male name. And, of course, you're always wondering, are they doing that on purpose? Are they trying to push? Or is it just that that's how they thought of me if I'd worked there for like 18 years? And I was never quite sure until I retired. And I got so many goodbyes and smiles and hugs from people that I didn't talk to. And I hadn't realized how much support I had there. So that was a really amazing thing to get.
Yeah, I got the same thing at work, too, occasionally. Especially when you're intent on doing something. I had one engineer was into something. He wasn't looking at me. He was on the other side of some equipment and used the old pronoun or the old name, but immediately kind of caught it and said, "Oh, Rachel, I'm so sorry. Hey, don't worry about it." I even used the old name one time when I was doing something intent, answered the phone. And as soon as I answered, "Who's that?" You know, it happens. But again, I really feel it in my company. I don't think there's one person that maliciously has used the wrong name. So I think we've come a long way in the last 10 years in that regard, people being more accepting.
That's great. So you have some empathy and understanding of what all the folks are doing around you, as well as what you're going through. And if we were to do anything in a business environment that would help people become more empathetic to understanding, you've said that it's education. Are there organizations out there that businesses could rely on for doing that kind of education, or does it just take individuals like yourselves coming to the forefront and creating that education?
I think there's some of both. There's a Transgender Law Center in San Francisco, which I referred our HR people to check with them. And they're real good at promoting this kind of thing and have some very good programs down there. Do you know of any others?
I don't know of any. And in my case, I had a really good manager. And what he did was he called everyone in a room and had me come in and stay in his office till everybody was in there the first day that I came in as Jackie. And then I went in and I talked to everybody. And one of the things that I covered is I was 54 years old that year. And I said, "I've been thinking about this for almost 54 years. You, it's new. So I know it's going to be hard for you because this is a surprise. This is something I've been dealing with my whole life. So yes, I understand you might have a hard time dealing with it, but it's going to be okay." Mm-hmm. And you need to give people credit that it's a big impact on them.
I'm fairly certain that Positive Images helps do education to businesses, and as well as, you know, classes around high school, colleges. Myself and another trans friend that I have, we co-founded a organization called FTM Sonoma County, and we try and do outreach to classes. I know he does more of business stuff. But that's just because I work and don't have the ability to get a lot of the time off that he can. So we do try and do that as individuals without getting paid and without doing, you know, like a specific organization like Positive Images.
Well, our time with you three is drawing near to a close. We have about 4 minutes left here, and I'd like to offer each one of you an opportunity to say some parting words or inspiring words to someone who might be listening, who is either trying to come to terms with the fact that they are transgender and coming out, or the fact that they're gay or lesbian or bisexual, and whatever you'd like to offer around that. And we'll start with you, Jackie.
For me, the most important thing was finding other people like myself, getting out and finding that I wasn't the only person that was so strange that, you know, I had to hide who I was my whole life. And that acceptance by those other people allowed me to be more accepting myself, and it made my transition so much easier.
Thank you.
Finding other people to lend you support. There are support groups around the area. My organization actually has two support groups that one's a check-in meeting, one's usually a topic meeting. And so we meet at least twice a month. And you're not alone. If you're in the closet, it's a very lonely place to be. It's better to come out and be with people who are more like you are.
And can you mention a website or phone number where people can get in touch with your organization if they'd like to?
Yeah, my organization is FTM Sonoma County. It's ftmsc.org is the website.
Wonderful. Thank you. And Rachel?
Yeah, I've got a couple of things. One is I have to mention the spouses of transgendered folks. I give my wife great compliments. It's taken her years to, we had some rough times. When I came out, finally, I mean, she knew about it for a while, but when it was finally time to do it, it took her a long time. So what I tell people is think about it. If your spouse came to you and said, oh, by the way, I'm the other gender, how would you feel about it? So put yourself in somebody else's shoes, you know, and try to understand and be patient with them. Because a lot of times we transgender, we get all excited, find out we're not terminally unique when we meet some of our friends and go at it like a herd of elephants, you know. And we have to be considerate of the other folks around us, you know, and give them some space and time to adapt to us, as Jackie mentioned earlier.
Yeah, I really like that fact that Jackie said, I've been dealing with this now for 54 years.
Exactly.
And, you know, that's a point that I try and make in my own life when I'm, you know, talking to people about coming out and things like that. Do you have any last closing thoughts,
Joel? That's pretty much it. I think it was wonderful having you folks here. And it's a perspective that I think we need to hear more about and we need to hear more of. So it's really, really appreciated.
Absolutely. So I'd like to issue a last thank you to Rachel Sutters, Sean Moran, and Jackie Nugent for being with us on Outbeat Now tonight. Thank you very much, all three of you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to take a quick music break, but do stay with us. The Outbeat Youth segment is next. We'll be talking with Shane Windmeyer, the executive director of Campus Pride, about how colleges and universities are working to create a more comfortable place for LGBT students. Now here's Katie Lang with her 2010 Winter Olympics version of Hallelujah.
There was a secret chord that David played, and it pleased the Lord. But you don't really care for music, do ya? Well, it goes like this: the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, the major left, the baffled king composing. Hallelujah, 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 hallelujah.
Support for Outbeat Salon on KRCB-FM comes from members and from Advanced Fertility Medical Associates Group, providing comprehensive fertility care to men, women, and couples wishing to expand their families. Advanced technology, old-fashioned care. Serving Santa Rosa and the North Bay for 25 years. On the web at afamd.com. We also have support from St. Joseph Health System of Sonoma County. St. Joseph Health System understands there's more to you than can be found on a chart. By taking the time to understand your life, the team at St. Joseph Health System is able to provide a whole new level of personalized care and comfort. More information can be found at stjosephhealth.org.
Maybe I've been here before, seen this room, I've walked this floor. I used to live alone before I knew ya, and I saw your flag on the marble arch. Our love is not a victory march, it's a cold and it's a broken hallelujah. 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 There's a God above, but all I've ever learned from love is how to shoot somebody who outdrew ya. It's not a cry that you hear at night. It's not someone who's seen the light. It's a call.
Welcome back. You're listening to Outbeat Now on KRCB Radio. It's time now for this month's Outbeat Youth segment. Welcome to this month's edition of Outbeat Youth. I'm Greg Moralia. Outbeat Youth is a program for and about queer youth in the North Bay. While we're live on the air, you can chat with us online at outbeatyouth.com. And we invite you to join us on Facebook and MySpace. And remember, you can always download prior shows on iTunes. Now here's Junior Vega with this month's movie review.
This is Junior Vega with your movie review of the month. It was announced March 17th on Wednesday that the Rialto Theater will be losing their lease come September 1st. It is a loss for the community. Let's hope for the better. Kai Boy, the proprietor, is actively searching for a new building. His work is far from over. He will still continue to bring the best films in the world to Sonoma County. So come to the Rialto, bring friends and family, and let's make their last few months their best. For more about the story of Rialto and what's happening, you can go to Rialto Cinema's website, rialtocinemas.com. The movie this month, The Hurt Locker. The film is rated R for war, violence, and language. The film is an intense portrayal of soldiers who have one of the most dangerous jobs in the world, disarming bombs. This action-packed suspenseful drama has made history. Director Catherine Bigelow was the first woman director to win an Oscar for Best Director. This film has won 6 Academy Awards, Best Picture, Best Directing, Best Original Screenplay, Best Film Editing, Best Sound Editing, and Sound Mixing. This film runs for 130 minutes. It is out to buy or rent on DVD, but if you'd rather watch it on the big screen, it is still playing at the Rialto. Just go to rialtocinemas.com for showtime. This is Junior Vega, and that's the wrap.
Well, tonight we have with us live in the studio the executive director of Campus Pride and my good friend, Shane Windmeyer. Shane is the author of 5 different books and the founder of Campus Pride, which is the nation's only nonprofit organization for student leaders, campus groups, that's working to create a safer environment for LGBT students. Shane, welcome to California and welcome to Outbeat Youth.
Thank you, Craig. It's good to be here.
Well, let's start out by going back to your college days. Tell us a little bit about what it was like for you in college. And tell us about the fraternity life.
Sure. That's really how I got started on this journey of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender issues is when I came kind of to college and started coming out to my my fraternity brothers, which didn't happen my freshman year. I went born and raised in Kansas, of all places. And, my family grew up on a farm. And I chose a college that was close to home. I was a first-generation college student, so neither my mom or dad had had the opportunity to go to college. So when I came out to my fraternity brothers, it was a daunting task. It was very difficult back in the 90s. I mean, there wasn't a lot of gay, lesbian visibility, much less anything about bisexual or transgender issues. And I was fortunate in that my fraternity brothers were able to really understand the value of brotherhood and really see past or at least embrace the idea of, you know, a gay brother being part of the fraternity. There have always been gay men who have been part of our fraternity specifically, but also fraternities across the United States. If you look at the founding of many of our international and national fraternities and sororities, there's been lesbian, gay, bisexual people who have been involved, and I would even argue transgender people have been involved. So I was very fortunate, and you know, my college days, you know, as many students are very formative in how we figure out our views.
So that must have been particularly challenging. I mean, when I think about kids coming out in college today, there's such great visibility of LGBT youth. There's gay straight alliances, but in the 90s, there really wasn't that, was there?
No, there wasn't. There was an organization on campus called GLARE, which was the Gay Lesbian Alliance for Resource and Education. I know.
I'm not sure I would have picked that acronym.
The organization was founded when I was actually a student there. They created a safe zone program. It was actually one of the first safe zone programs in the nation, started in Kansas of all places. And the one gay person on campus was quite queer and quite gender bending in that he wore a little skirt and had a small little leather bag that said boy toy on it. And so he like frightened every straight man on campus, basically. But, you know, that young man at the time helped in many ways the progress of that rural campus. I went to school at Emporia State, and you know, we added sexual orientation as part of our non-discrimination statement back in 1990. It would have been 93, 94 on a small, you know, college town in the middle of Kansas. And so that has a lot to do with it. And so I was lucky to have people like him on campus who were that visible and that progressive.
Sure, sure. So that led you to write some books, and maybe we'll come back to talk a little bit more about those. We're going to give a couple of them away, in fact, later on the show. But you also formed an organization called Campus Pride. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. So, you know, I had written my first book back in 1998. It was called Out on Fraternity Row. And it was the first time ever anyone's, you know, thought to talk about how being gay in a fraternity was difficult, or how brothers chose to come out or be closeted. And because of that book, I got a lot of national attention. Matthew Shepard also passed away that year in a very tragic hate crime. And, you know, everything, it was, you know, it was a time in our, you know, in my life where things kind of merged together. And, you know, I created a an initiative called the Lambda 10 Project. And Lambda 10 eventually evolved into what we do with Campus Pride today. Campus Pride was basically my attempt to take the work I was doing on an individual level and make it national in scope, to make sure that when I leave this earth, or when I decide to do something different, which doesn't seem likely, but you know, that there's the vision's there, and that other people can buy into that vision. And so in 2001, we created what we call Campus Pride Net, which was really an opportunity for the 2,500 four-year public and private colleges that don't have an LGBT resource center, or really don't have a staff person to really work on these issues, because we really only have about 150 today that four-year public and private colleges actually do have resources out of the 2,500. You know, it was a way to give these colleges an online network, a place to go to know how to start their GSA, their Gay Straight Alliance, you know, how to do fundraising, how to start a safe zone program, you know, basic nuts and bolts that Campus PrideNet at the time wanted to make sure happened. Mm-hmm. And it took off. And so, you know, about 4 years ago, we created Campus Pride, which is a full, you know, charitable nonprofit organization with many programs and services beyond just an online clearinghouse or network. And it's basically evolved into really the only leading, well, the only national organization that's really leading the way for LGBT college issues here in the U.S.
That's amazing. Well, I think we take for granted, because we're here in California and there is a great visibility of GSAs, both at the college level and high school level. But, you know, as you travel around the country, what's going on college campuses? Do those organizations now exist today?
You know, Campus Pride estimates, based on the research we've done, and we have a new report coming out this September called The State of Higher Education for LGBT People. GLSEN, which is our sister organization, which does K-12 work, has had a national report that's come out for a number of years. I think they publish it every 2 years. There's never been a report that compares the high school experience to the college experience. And so Campus Pride this September is releasing the first ever national report to really look at what the experience was for high school students versus you know, college students. And so it's quite phenomenal, and we're going to learn a lot from that research. But, you know, Campus Pride has estimated that out of the nearly 2,500 colleges and universities, right under about half of them actually have an active GSA of some sort. So we have a long way to go. There's only about 600 colleges that are, again, four-year public and privates that actually have sexual orientation as part of their non-discrimination statement.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of work to be done. And when we talk about gender identity and expression, we're talking about just, you know, half of those. So right. About 280 have gender identity and expression.
So those colleges that are progressive and have included those issues in their non-discrimination policies, what kinds of physical changes have you seen take place on college campuses to become more welcoming and more accepting, and so that a transgender student, for example, or a gay student would feel safer?
Sure. So on our website at campuspride.org, there's a number of strategies, policies, programs, and practices that colleges can take or have taken. Our index, our campus climate index, actually has about 55 questions that are related to LGBT policies, programs, and practices that are considered to be benchmarks. So if you're a college out there and you're looking at what you can do, you know, we have about 55 benchmarked practices that many colleges across the nation have started to do. Some of those would include, obviously, things related to policy statements, but, you know, including, you know, single-gendered facilities for trans students or for all students when it comes to showering in residence hall facilities, having gender-neutral restrooms, again, for trans students specifically, but also for any student, you know, creating opportunities for students to programmatically be engaged in the campus. One of the areas we look at is academic success. If a student doesn't feel safe or welcome, it's not a surprise that academically they may not achieve at the level that you would hope they would. And so more campuses are doing mentor programs for LGBT students. And so when you come in as an out LGBT student to possibly your freshman year, you can be assigned a mentor who can help you kind of adjust to the environment or to the campus community. And so there's some really progressive things out there happening. They're happening on a smaller level. And what we found in the last 2 years since our index was really published and out there is that colleges didn't know that other colleges were doing this progressive work. So you have schools in California or schools in Kansas, and they're competing potentially for the same students. So let's take the Ivy Leagues, for instance. You know, Harvard never knew what Stanford was doing.
Right.
And, you know, these benchmarks have created this competition amongst Ivies, amongst large public research institutions to say, you know, we want those gay students just like you do.
Right.
And we're willing to do more.
Right, because that means money, doesn't it?
It means money. And when we start talking about the bottom line, when we start talking about money for colleges, as you know, here in California, everyone can use some extra money. And so that's when we start to win.
Right, right. Well, we have one of Shane's books that might be very helpful for a high school student who's looking for a safe place to go. It's called The Advocate College Guide for LGBT Students. Written by Shane Winmeyer, who's our guest tonight. And he's autographed it, and we're going to give it to the very first caller who gives us a call at 584-2020. That's 584-2020. If you're a college student and looking for a guide to help you find the LGBT-friendly college or university, give us a call here at the station, and we will send you that book. So, you know, I didn't have a chance to go to a four-year school and to join a fraternity, but I know that's a really exciting time for people to be away and to have their first experience away from home. How have fraternity and sorority life changed for gay and lesbian students over the years?
Sure. I would like to think, based on the research we did 3 years ago, that we've seen a lot of progress in the area of fraternities and sororities. Obviously, that can be very regional. It can be very much based on the campus itself. But we found that as there's more visibility around queer LGB issues, around sexual orientation, you know, brothers and sisters in fraternities and sororities realize that they're indeed gay people today. So young people are much more progressive minded. The problem comes when you have alumni who are involved in those organizations who, you know, have their mindsets and their bias and prejudice that they put on to the young college students in the fraternity and sororities. The other thing I think is fascinating is it's, and this isn't necessarily proven in research, but it's something that I have taken from where the issue is. And I really challenge folks in fraternities and sororities to understand that it's maybe not about gay sexual orientation any longer. It's about gender expression. And I say that because there are many gay men who may have a masculine expression to their gender who get into fraternities without a problem, right? So they're out as gay, but their masculine, you know, expression is, you know, very tantamount in how they express themselves. Then you have the feminine expression male who might be gay or might be straight. And that's where the conflict comes in, is more in the gender expression and the bias that comes with the gender representation,
right,
than it does actually with sexual orientation. And I'm seeing that more of an issue to do education on. And, you know, trans issues are coming up in fraternity and sorority life, and just like they're coming up in college campuses. Colleges for the longest time didn't want to talk about it, didn't want to deal with transgender issues, and they're having to because young people today are much more in tune with not only their sexual identity but their gender identity and expression.
Right. So what advice would you give a high school senior who's going to make that move to college? Would you recommend to them that they come out right away? Would you recommend that they enter college out? What do you think?
Well, you know, I look at the news today, and there's so many young people, whether it be the New York Times article about the young man in Nebraska, or whether it be the young woman who is taking her same-sex date to prom in Mississippi and then was, you know, they shut down the prom. I look at these young people, and I say, if they're willing to do that, they should come out. I mean, they should. We should have a optional question on the admission form that they can come out, so that way they don't get stuck at a campus that doesn't want them or that isn't prepared to deal with an out student.
Right.
Because ultimately, when I pay for a college education, I want a place that I can go that is going to be friendly and welcoming around gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender issues. I don't want the same experience I had in high school. Let's hope that that young woman in Mississippi doesn't get stuck at a college where she's going to have the same issues. And so if they're that bold and I applaud it, then I think they should come out. Now, if they're questioning their sexuality or just not there, you know, it's a personal issue. And
right.
So, you know, I think young people today, though, you know, straight people, they want colleges to be gay friendly. They don't want a college environment where they have to worry about their gay uncle coming and visiting or their lesbian mom. I mean, they want a place where everyone can be accepted and welcome. And more colleges want to be called gay friendly, to be honest.
Right. Well, let's go back then and talk about then some of the steps that high school seniors should be thinking about as they search for a college. Now, you mentioned the Campus Climate Index, and that's an online feature that's free, right?
Yes, that's correct. It is free.
And what's the website for that?
It's campusclimateindex.org.
And would you say that that's a good place to start your search for a good school?
Oh, definitely. The Advocate College Guide that you're giving away on air is actually a resource that was published in 2006. And it's a wonderful tool as a book. But what we did is that we took what we learned with the Advocate College Guide and we expanded it to not be a commercial entity, but to really be a research and a benchmarking tool and a place for high school students who are looking at college or people returning to college to go online and get this free resource, because not everyone can afford a book for $21.95 or $25. So, you know, the Campus Climate Index is definitely a place to start. One of the cool things about the online feature at campusclimateindex.org is that there's a book bag. So it's like gay shopping for college, right? You can actually put any college, there's 230 right now, any of those 230 colleges or all of them into your book bag, and it's free. So it's like shopping for free, and you hit submit, and all those colleges receive your name, Greg, and that you want to go to college, and that you're out and queer, and you want them to basically compete for your education to say, you know, we're the best place for you, Greg. And it's the first time where we've taken the invisible minority and we've made them visible for college recruitment. And that's pretty exciting.
Well, I've completed the survey on the other side for a college, for Napa Valley College. And it really is a very, very in-depth look at college life. I mean, it asked about policies, inclusivity policies. It asked about programs of study. I mean, you can really learn a lot about a college by going to the Campus Climate Index first.
Oh, definitely. You know, one of the exciting things about the index is it has basically two sides to it that you mentioned. Colleges, whether they be community colleges, vo-tech schools, four-year public or private, go online and they take this assessment. They receive a private confidential report that tells them where to improve, what they can do better. And then they have the option to either remain kind of invisible and like not out there or to come out online. And we ask our college students all the time, our faculty and staff to come out, but we seldom ask our colleges to come out as LGBT friendly. And so the index allows colleges to come out as LGBT friendly. And then on the other side of it, you have high school students, family members who are looking to send their kid to college, you know, being able to go online and search these LGBT friendly colleges, and it gives them rankings from 1 star up to 5 stars. It's the future of college outreach and recruitment, to
right.
be honest.
So you get your list together and now you're going to visit the campus, hopefully. What are some specific things that students should be looking for to know that this is a safe LGBT friendly place?
Well, first of all, don't listen to what's necessarily in the admission campus visit tour. I know that sounds weird, but you know, the student who's giving the tour, or the staff or faculty, I mean, they're trying to sell you on the campus. So come prepare with your own questions. In the back of the Advocate College Guide that you're giving away on air, it actually has a campus visit scorecard sheet. So you basically ask the questions and you score the campus based on that fact sheet. So it's kind of cool. It's an awesome tool, and you can actually find it online at campuspride.org too, in case you can't afford the book. But you know, some of the questions include you know, do they have a student organization, a GSA? Do they have a safe zone program? Is there a high number of out LGBT students on campus? Do they have a way for allies to be engaged? Is there a residence floor, or is there an option in housing that you can have a gay-friendly roommate? Is there a, you know, is there an LGBT resource center or a place for LGBT students to go to get support? Are there counseling or, you know, health services? Are there LGBT course offerings? Do faculty and staff actually ask about LGBT issues in the classroom? Right. So are they part of the diversity dialogue? And the list is quite exhaustive, and then it allows you to add your own questions. And you add them up, and you basically create a score for each campus that you go visit on your campus visit.
Wow. What a tremendous tool to have right at your fingertips and to be able to use, you know, sort of in the comfort of your own home. Let's shift gears a little bit. I know that one of the other projects that you're involved in with Campus Pride is a leadership camp. Tell us a little bit about that and the one coming up here this summer.
Sure. So you're talking about our gay camp or our queer camp. The students call it all sorts of things, but it's obviously the only camp in the nation where an LGBT, lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender student can actually go and, you know, concentrate on leadership. Now, straight allies are also welcome. And ultimately, it's kind of, we have had a number of straight students who've come, and they feel like for the first time ever, they're being challenged because they're amongst a group of all LGBT students and having to deal with leadership. LGBT students, on the other hand, it's the first time where they can be part of a leadership camp or a leadership experience where their being gay isn't really a big issue. So, you know, it's all about social justice. This year it's actually hosted in Nashville, Tennessee. So it's going to be fun, July 20th through July 25th.
Great. You can find more information about that at campuspride.org. Well, we've been talking with Shane Windmeyer, who is the founder and executive director of Campus Pride and the creator of the Campus Climate Index. And again, if you'd like more information about either of these two tools, please visit the website at campuspride.org. And of course, we'll have those links posted on the Outbeat Youth website, and you can get those after the show tonight. Shane, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you, Greg.
And before we say goodnight, we've got one more of Shane's books to give away. It's called Brotherhood, Gay Life in College Fraternities. And we will give it to the first caller who calls in at 584-2020. That's 584-2020. And that's it for this edition of Outbeat Youth.